When I first came to Brookhaven town, way hey, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around. Way hey, 90.1, then one day I turned on the dial. Way hey, 90.1, there I found music to make me smile. Way hey, 90.1, I waited for a legal ID. Way hey, 90.1, the DJ said WUSB. Way hey, 90.1, they start each day with the rising sun. Way hey, 90.1. Don't ever finish till after day is done. Way hey, 90.1. So if you want good music to hear, way hey, 90.1. There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear. Way hey, 90.1. So if you like the sounds, do take a look. Way hey, 90.1. At WUSB Stony Brook. Hey, hey, hey.
You want sea shanties? We've got sea shanties. Yes, WUSB Stony Brook, 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. And it's another brand new edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein over here. Kyle over there.
Yes, yes, I'm here.
What do you think of the new theme?
Oh, it's terrific. I'm enjoying it. I was just listening, actually.
You had your eyes closed. It's
Occasionally, yeah. I was going in and out of...
It's rather stirring, I have to say. And as you may know, every time a new president takes office, we change the theme here at Off the Wall. Didn't happen the first... We started in 2003, so we started midway through Bush's first term, so that first part didn't count. So we went up until 2009, then we had Obama's second term, and then we had what followed. Did I miss something? There might have been another one in there somewhere. No, I think that's it. I think we got them all.
There's three.
Yeah.
Three or four.
One, two, three, four. This would be the fifth.
Fifth.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah, it kind of summons up the feeling of renewal, something different that we're seeing everywhere. You notice everyone in the street, they're like kind of skipping now. They sort of prancing about. And the singing. Everyone is singing. What is up with that? People are speaking in verse, you know? I don't want to say we're overdoing it a bit. Okay, it's the first week. After the first week, let's try and be a little more serious.
Yeah, I didn't see as much of that as you did, but I noticed the animals seemed like more, I don't know, relaxed.
How do they know?
Yeah.
How do they know?
They're very sensitive.
Yeah, they pick up on these things. But yes, Joe Biden has been in office not even a week, because he took office last Wednesday. It's Tuesday. But he's done a lot in that period of time with the executive orders. Oh, my God. That's just unbelievable. I have a list here, and I can't possibly go through them all. There's that many. But executive order to promote racial equity. That's a nice one. Rejoining the Paris Agreement on climate change. Requiring mask wearing on federal property. Ending the Muslim ban.
Allowing trans members to serve again.
Yeah.
In the military.
It's just... There's like 50 of them here, and they keep coming. And I think, you know, that's kind of what he has to do at this point, because, all right, folks, I know we all want to get along. We all want to trust each other. Don't trust Mitch McConnell. Don't trust the Republicans. They will stab you in the back first chance they get. They're already showing signs of that. Very, very big signs. Who was it? Who was it who said, yeah, we're not going to have the impeachment trial until after Trump leaves office? That was Mitch McConnell who did that. And now, today, Mitch McConnell voted to say that he doesn't think it's constitutional to have a trial after Trump has left office. You see, they do this every time. They trick you into doing something as part of a compromise, and then when you do it, yeah, you know what, because you're doing that, the whole thing's invalid. It's like when they got rid of the option in Obamacare, you know, where you have to pay a fee if you don't have health care.
Single payer mandate.
And they got rid of that. And then once they got rid of that, they said, well, you don't have that. So the whole thing is invalid now because you don't have that. The thing that we got you to take out. So this is what they do. We have to know this by now. We've been dealing with it for so long. So please, let's not keep trying. Like, Obama made this mistake this whole first year in office of trying to compromise and get Republicans on board. They're not coming on board. They've got their own boat, okay? They don't need this one. They're going to keep doing their thing, and we need to do our thing, or it's not going to get done.
Yeah, they're so full of sanctimonious BS right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're tripping over themselves, just falling left and right to preach and get all high and mighty about what unity is and what Democrats need to do for
them. Oh my God, the unity! Can we just
what
unite?
What Democrats need to do for them again and again. Here we go, the grievances.
So we try and topple democracy, we fail, and now, you know, if you call us on it, you're the one that's divisive. Nice.
Hey, you know what? That's fine that the leader of the Democratic Party and our country, Joe Biden, it's...
The theme's ending. First time playing. How about that? Oh, I like it. I like that a lot. So get used to it, folks. Next 4 years, that's what you're going to be hearing.
I was just saying, I wanted to say that it's fine for the president to preach the unity. That's his job. I kind of expect that from a leader. But do not for 1 second get it backwards that somehow we see some olive branch from Mitch McConnell. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, you're right. That's a very good point. The president has to, unlike what Trump did, the president cannot get his hands dirty with all the squabbling back and forth. He has to be nice to everybody, granted. But those of you in the Senate, you don't have to be like that. So you need to fight for every scrap, and you need to play every trick that is in the book, and you need to make some new ones, because that is what they do. That is what they have done. And that is why, you know, as of yesterday, Mitch McConnell still held power. He was, I don't even know how this works, but he was somehow threatening to hold on to leadership of all these committees, and he was able to get away with it, even though he was in the minority. And the last I heard was that he dropped his demand that the filibuster not be, that Democrats not try and end the filibuster. He dropped that demand. But what if he hadn't dropped that demand?
He was trying to bargain with that. Yeah. Uh-huh. But I don't think that would have been something, you know, something he aspires and would like. But, you know, we all would like all kinds of things. I don't think doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get what he wants, especially anymore.
And the thing is, with the filibuster, it's kind of complicated. In fact, it's very complicated. And right now, there are even two Democrats that don't support ending the filibuster. And here's where I take issue with a lot of Democrats, because they're calling for the blood of Joe Manchin in West Virginia, because he's saying that he doesn't think it's right to abolish the filibuster, because he feels that if you're in the Senate, you should be able to negotiate. I don't agree based on the current cast of characters, but I don't think he should be demonized the way that people like Liz Cheney are being demonized by Republicans now for daring to speak out against Trump. It's a disagreement. You deal to disagreements. You play politics. You figure it out. But you know that he is a Democrat. He will be on your side. And a Democrat in West Virginia, of all places, a senator. Come on, hold on to that. So let's not make new enemies. It might not happen now, but it's something that we can play later, I think. It doesn't solve all the problems anyway if you get rid of the filibuster. There are still issues. But there are ways of maneuvering. There are ways of figuring it out and getting things done, even if you still have that in there. I know, because the Republicans have been doing this.
Tell me more about the committeeship thing. So what was Mitch McConnell trying to do that for? Because I heard about the filibuster thing that he, like, for the last couple of days was trying to use as get leverage or get... basically so he can ramble on and hold up everything for 4 years. He's, that looks to him like a viable strategy, but it's not. No one wants to listen to him, and it's the antithesis of getting things done. So he relented on that. What are you talking about? Committeeships?
Yeah.
How would that work? He's trying to rewrite the rules.
Right now, there are Republican leaders of the major committees. The Senate Oversight Committees and things like that.
But that changes when the leadership changes,
Well, technically, yeah, but somehow he still, or the Republicans still, were holding the leadership positions until he did something. And I just cannot fathom that was even possible. There are so many things I cannot fathom about the way our government works.
So it's maybe like chairmanship.
Yes.
Appointee appointments were something he had to sign off on. He thought he could maybe...
I don't know if he could have done that forever or if that's something that eventually was going to expire. I get the feeling it wasn't to his advantage to continue playing that hand because he dropped it awfully quick. But it doesn't mean the fight is over. Obviously, there are still going to be issues, but let's not forget this. Democrats have the advantage and they need to start acting like they have the advantage. Now, there are some things that require a supermajority in the Senate, some things that just require a simple majority. There are ways of playing the hands so that you can just use a simple majority to advance something forward, even if it's only on a temporary basis. You're not going to be able to just abolish the filibuster. That's going to take 2/3 of the Senate regardless, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. It's very, very unlikely, but there are other ways of just, I guess they call it the nuclear option. They've done this in the past for federal judges. The Republicans did it for Supreme Court justices, I believe. And you can enact the nuclear option for various issues, various things that you vote on. And that's something they have to look at. But the disadvantage with that is it stays the nuclear option where a simple majority gets your way when the other party takes power as well. My answer to that, don't let the other party take power. Hold on to the advantage. Hold on to the majority. Assume that it's a threat. And that's, again, the Democrats have to get better at that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I would say long term that has to be something well in mind on the off chance that the first term here becomes a second term. And even thereafter, they need to stay focused on what got the gains and traction in this go round, which was getting out the vote, adding new voters, dealing with disenfranchisement. I think big redistricting stuff is going to be coming up soon. Like, all of those factors are still going to matter in winning elections when that becomes important. But in the interim, the short term, I think for Democrats is a lot of like what we've been saying, just like go plow ahead with a platform, because there's really been a lack of one for a long time.
On the issue of redistricting, I appeal to our listeners for this, because this is yet another thing I don't get. How the redistricting works, why it works the way it does. Here's my simple question, and please, if you're a listener out there that has the answer, write to us, otw@2600.com, or we'll read it on the air next week. But why can't we do something simple, like simply have a district be the same thing as a county? You know, that's a border that doesn't change, and it's, you know, you wouldn't have all these political shenanigans where you're trying to get some kind of advantage by redrawing the lines of districts every couple of years. I mean, sure, people could try and plow their way into a particular county to get an advantage there, but that just seems a lot more legitimate than what the politicians do every few years with drawing these crazy patterns so that they get an advantage. Why can't we already have the boundaries? We have counties, we have towns, we have all kinds of things like that. What's the point of having districts go over those lines? Why not have representatives from each county? You know, that, why did you make a county in the first place if it doesn't signify something that should be represented? I'm sure there's a good reason why they don't do this. I just don't know what the reason is. I know there's a lot more counties than there are representatives. You have to figure something out for that, but it seems like it makes more sense.
It may not be as representative because of historic socioeconomic circumstances around the way different counties.
Nothing could be less representative than we have now. I don't see how it could be any worse.
I'm just arguing it could be something like that.
I'm sure it is.
I don't know exactly what it is.
I'm sure it is, but for God's sake, we have to do better.
Well, when our listeners write us with their informed response.
I think some are writing already. Thank you.
Yeah.
Please send those in and you know, keep the cuss words to a minimum. We have to edit those out, obviously, but I would like to know. And yeah, I know, I'm ignorant. Okay, call me that if you want, if you need to. But, you know, there's a lot I don't know. Boy.
They're just so critical not to lose sight of. It has to be on back burner, I think. And we can't, I think, rest on laurels of any kind. There's no time for any of that. I think that there's so much need already.
What does that mean, rest on? What is that, a tree? Are you resting on a laurel bush? What does that mean? Resting on laurels.
You really want to talk about that instead? It was a turn of phrase.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't use those if you don't want to pique my interest.
Okay.
But no, if you want to continue on another point, go right ahead.
I can change the subject to that.
No, it's okay. I'll just be forever curious.
I think it's like part of the crown in what Olympians would wear in sort of athletic competition.
On their heads?
Greek or Roman. Yeah.
So somebody would sit on your head?
Like, as a winner, you have like a crown of laurels.
Yeah, but someone's resting on that. I don't understand why someone would be resting.
It's sort of resting on your achievement. You know, like you're the winner, so you don't have to continue.
Oh,
to
that's totally how I didn't
something.
Take it. Wow. Okay. All right.
You know, like it's like you've got your medal or your I don't know.
If there's a listener who knows the answer to this, again, the email address, otw@2600.com. This year, we want to be informed.
If there's a listener that sees a point to the general overarching direction of our conversation, please write us with your thoughts about that. Also to otw@2600.com.
If there's a listener that has an idea for another show that would do well in this time period, I'm sure that's going to have an avalanche of mail.
No,
otw@2600.com. That's 2600, the numbers. .com. Yeah, speaking of domains, I don't know how many people still register domains, or you've given everything over to Google, but we register a lot of domains. And one thing happened that really annoyed me. I got this this notice from a registrar. Those are the people that you pay money to so that you can hold on to your name, like 2600.com. I don't know what gives them the right to take money from you for doing that, but they do. I got a notice saying, hey, your credit card number changed, which I knew about, and we weren't able to renew your domain. So we're going to suspend it. And, you know, that's fair. If I don't pay for it, you should suspend it. But it's not due for another 2 months. You're trying to renew it now. Why? And why are you threatening me 2 months ahead of time? You shouldn't be trying to renew it 2 months before it renews. No, that's not right. So I'm not answering their auto computer thing that keeps sending me mail every day. Not answering them. Yeah, it's a human versus computer thing.
You'll show them.
Uh-oh. I don't know if you could hear that, but we have a computer device. Oh, I did it again. It's an Alexa device. Actually, we have one of those too. There are key words that we keep saying that trigger these devices. Imagine the work we do, and we can't say the word computer in the house. All right, I said it low enough that time where it couldn't hear me. But
realize this is all to supplement touchscreens, which are going to be falling out of fashion very shortly.
They will?
Well, as soon as you buy your 5G phone or whatever, then touchscreens will go out of fashion. But you have to pay $900 for that first, and then you'll just be able to talk to everything because no one will touch anything anymore. Oh, no, germs. Because of COVID, why touchscreens will become, they'll become like germ surfaces.
Did you hear about elevator buttons? You won't have to touch them anymore. You just come near them.
You lick them.
No, you don't lick them. You put your finger, oh, you're joking. No, you put your finger near them and they take the heat as an implication that that's where you want to go. But
are you making that
no,
up?
No,
I'm
not. I'm not making it up.
Space age.
This is the kind of thing I would make up, but no, this actually happened. And I just wonder, people who are standing close to all the buttons, we're going to make every single floor light up. I know that's going to happen. And you know, the whole thing where you press every single button on an elevator, you won't have to do that anymore. You just have to get close to it.
Somebody's like posterior as they're swinging around in the elevator. I can see that happening. That will be a hazard of the future.
Wow. So yeah, that's what's going. Hey, this pandemic though, I got to tell you, it's out of control. Still, it's out of control.
It's worse than it ever was when it began with all the uncertainty and craziness. We thought it was bad then.
Mm-hmm. It's not a surprise because this is exactly what we were expecting after the holidays. There was going to be a peak. What's particularly frustrating is that there's a vaccine. There's a vaccine, but it's so hard to get, even for those people that qualify. We don't qualify yet, probably not for a while. But there are people we know who do. And in fact, you know, it seems to be hitting more people that we know now. And that's really the scary part. And just trying to help them, trying to get appointments for them and realizing there's not enough to go around. And here's the thing that I don't get. And again, listeners, enlighten us, because I don't understand this. But I've talked to people who have been affected by this directly, who have the virus. And they're blaming Cuomo. They're blaming the governor. Now, I know you can blame Cuomo for a lot of things. I know there are people who don't like him. They don't like his style. They don't like his politics. They don't like him, period. Okay, fine. I get that, and I respect that. But how do you blame him for this? He's getting 250,000 vaccines a week or less. It was 300,000 a couple of weeks ago. Trump didn't allocate enough, or the CDC, whoever you want to blame on the federal level, did not allocate enough to come to New York State to handle all the people that are now qualified. And that qualification comes from the CDC. They're the ones that say people over 65, you can now have the virus along with a whole number of other qualifications.
The vaccine, not the virus.
I'm sorry, you know, and I'm not the only one that keeps mixing those things up. I'm not the only one. I saw somebody on CNN do that the other day.
Nobody's asking waiting permission.
Yeah, I hope to get the virus in a week or two.
I'm in tier four. I'm ready to get it. Oh man, I'm going to go to a nice barbecue.
No, they qualify for the vaccine and they can't get it. I don't know. How are you blaming Cuomo for that? He doesn't have enough to go around. He can't produce these things himself. They're sent from the federal government or from CDC or whatever. So I don't understand that. So if somebody can enlighten me as to how this is his fault, don't bring up the whole nursing home thing. First of all, I've got issues with that because nursing homes have been like a magnet for this thing all around the world, but that's not what this is about anyway, no matter what you buy into as far as blame for that. So it's been particularly frustrating.
I think it's just a subconscious way of saying that they're showing dissatisfaction for not getting in with Trump in his good graces,
okay, so,
and ingratiating himself enough to Trump.
So because Cuomo didn't kiss Trump's ass enough, that's why you blame him? Is that really the reason? I was wondering.
I think that's what it is. It's like a subconscious tell. They can't possibly admit that their dear leader did anything ever wrong. So they project by blaming the nearest and dearest Democratic punching bag, a la governors, who themselves were thrust into like the Thunderdome for gathering supplies and resources during this entire thing, which itself was left to the states to deal with. There was never a national plan. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I really don't want to hear it. There's so many other things we can talk about in 2021 on this very radio program.
Yeah, and I'm really sick of hearing it too, because every time I look at various news channels, they're attacking Democrats who weren't in control of the situation to start with. They weren't able to decide how much they got. They're critiquing Cuomo for writing a book or something. That's like the big crime that he committed. Okay, you know, he wrote a book, and I guess he could have been doing more while he was writing the book, but he's there every day giving news conferences, giving updates, being pretty straightforward, and I think that means something. And no matter what, Trump was not doing that. Months went by between these press conferences, updates. He wasn't talking about this at all for the last couple of months. You can't excuse that. You can't ignore that. That happened. So, okay, you might hate Cuomo. You might say he shouldn't have written the book, but he is there on TV every day talking about this, answering questions, and Trump was absent, period. So regardless of who you like and who you don't like, those are facts that you really can't deny.
I honestly don't think it's such a bad thing, and it's not like he was preoccupied with all kinds of other recreational activity. Everyone was at home.
He didn't write the book. Someone wrote it for him. He just put his name on it.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't even something he worked on. Exactly. And it was all about the very... I mean, again, complain about the book, but maybe if you've read it, like I haven't read it. Why are we arguing about something that's like ethereal, this thing that
it's a pop-up
he
book.
Created?
It's a pop-up book with little...
Yeah, what if it was a kid's book? Who cares?
A COVID-19 thing pops up in the middle of it.
Yeah, he also made that like goofy poster and, you know, the crossing the, you know, Rubicon or whatever the heck we were doing, going up a mountain and down a cliff or something. I don't know. Look, we survived to laugh at ourselves, and I'm sure he would be the first person to say, yeah, you know, next time I'm steering the ship in New York State for a worldwide pandemic, I'll work on that. You know, it's there's plenty of reorganization and reassessment to be done here, but we're still in the midst of this.
Yeah, the thing is, and this is where I really wish people would think a little bit. People on the left don't like Cuomo as much as people on the right don't like Cuomo, but for different reasons. But I don't think people on the left are looking at this from a strategic point of view, saying, "Yeah, if I throw my hat into the hate Cuomo party, I'm strengthening the people that I really don't want in power." And this is a lesson that the left seems to have to learn every couple of years, over and over again. You know, same thing with de Blasio. Hate de Blasio as much as you want, but you're going to get somebody from the right wing in if you don't think of something better that is actually possible.
My, I think, reaction to that, too, something that comes to mind is, what are you doing to support him becoming a better mayor?
Yeah, how about that?
Better governor.
Oh, no, I don't talk to him. I don't. I refuse to even acknowledge. You know, you get childishness like that.
The silly part about it is that they do listen. And I think anybody who participated and voted and, you know, thank you for being a good active citizen this go round, that was critical. And I hope that, like, any new voter is going to look at that and say, wow, it really is kind of important, especially if they got their candidate of choice. But that we shouldn't continue to stay involved, or that it's... That it's not for us to be the person on the other end of the line as a constituent is silly. That's the other half, the other lion's share, maybe even the majority of your capability as a private voter or a citizen, and a member of the public. It's their responsibility to actually listen to you. So people who are upset, like, you know, you need to send those, you know, complaints, those ideas, those references, things, you resources that you want your politicians to be abreast of and concerned about. It's on you to you're obligated to share that, to be as active and participate as much. It's not, it doesn't necessarily have to stop with just submitting your vote in November. So I mean, that's something to not forget, and I it comes to mind is that, you know, you have to be all in on the many aspects of this public process.
You know who doesn't listen? Lee Zeldin, our congressman here on Long Island, does not listen because he's still peddling the same pro-Trump garbage, still trying to defend himself for attempting to overturn a free and fair election. Won't even acknowledge that it was a free and fair election. I don't know if he's even said President Biden yet. I don't know if he can do that. But yet he remains our representative, and we don't dispute the election. He won the election because there's a lot of meatheads around here that voted for him. There's no question about that. But somehow I wound up on his mailing list. Thank you whoever put me on his mailing list. And I got a questionnaire today. Yeah, as if you care what I have to say or what any of us have to say. This guy hasn't held a town hall in years. You know, it's pathetic. Two campaigns ago, you know, remember that was the main point in the first campaign against him.
Yeah, I think it was the Women's League of Voters, which. Was the last debate? Is that what you're remarking about, or just
no? A town hall.
Oh, town hall.
Town hall. Yeah.
Was that the same thing as a debate?
He did hold a debate. I think it was like on News 12 or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know that they were broadcast in the same way. I know we attended some of those.
But as
events,
far as facing constituents,
but it's thing to do it, but to be out there at all, like,
when Perry Gershon was running against him, that was the big thing. That was not last year. That was 2 years before that. The fact that he hadn't had a town hall and faced his constituents, because there were lots of issues then as well. He doesn't face his constituents.
But he didn't do that during the campaign, I think, with Nancy Goroff either. And that's part and parcel, like you're saying. That's campaign.
Anyway,
stuff.
There are three.
You got to talk to your.
There are three questions that he asked on this reaching out here. I'd like to be able to give this to everybody. I don't know how to do that, though, so that he'll get 10,000 replies. It doesn't matter if you're not his constituent, because, you know, Trump's not his constituent either, but he serves him a lot more than he serves any of us. Anyway, do you believe our country is on the right track or wrong track? You have three choices: right track, wrong track, undecided. All right, you're one third of the way through. Do you approve of the job I'm doing in Congress? Yes. No, undecided. All right, almost finished here. And this is the first time I think this has happened. Which issues are most important to you? Click all that apply. All right, here we go. Coronavirus, economy/jobs, education, environment, healthcare, immigration/border security, spending/debt, taxes, terrorism/foreign affairs, veterans, other, please specify. I put number one, terrorism, in parentheses, yours. the terrorist attack that you took part in or encouraged on our nation's capital on January 6th. Lee Zeldin, yes, I'm talking to you.
I would have done other, and I would have written in incitement to insurrection.
There's also an essay question. Is there anything else you would like to share about your priorities? It says optional. like this is mandatory. Lee Zeldin is telling us we have to fill this out or else. But it's optional. Oh, my God. That was a little bit of feedback there. Before too much time goes by, because we are more than halfway through the show, I think we did an injustice last week when we were talking about our film, Dances with Wolves. We didn't spend enough time on it. I think this is a film that really deserves more of a focus. And we actually saw the full version. A year after the film came out in 1990, they put out a version that was an hour longer. So it was originally a 3-hour film, turned into a 4-hour film. And the Blu-ray that I have had two commentary tracks. So I wound up seeing this thing, because I like to, when I get a DVD or a Blu-ray, I like to see every single feature. I feel like I got to get the most out of it. And so I saw 4 hours of one commentary, 4 hours of another commentary. There was the original 3-hour film. And then we saw the 4-hour film without commentary because there were so many things added to it. That's a lot of time spent on one film, but I never got bored with it. I know it's one of your favorite films from childhood. And I got to say, up until this point, we've been seeing Academy Award winning films from the beginning of the Academy Awards. And this might be the best one we've seen so far. It's just, there was so much in there. You know, it never goes too far down a particular road. Might be a little sappy at some point, but then, you know, you're in a buffalo hunt right after that, or something involving Native people, or something involving the Confederacy, or something involving Unionists. There's just so much there, and you see more every time you watch it. So if you have not seen Dances with Wolves, I definitely recommend the 4-hour version, because it tells the story better. There are a lot of things that I kind of had questions about for the first version that are answered in the second version, but it's also filmed so incredibly well, and it's just an amazing story. And if Kevin Costner does nothing else in his life, he has served a great purpose to humanity by making that film. I know there's some stereotypical things, particularly with Native Americans, but there's also so much that is good, that is enlightening, that makes me feel such anger at our history and what we've done. But that's all I wanted to say about it. I know you had more you wanted to.
Sure. And it's the type of film that, like you said, there were some things that didn't make sense. And I'd never, ever seen the much longer version. And it does fill in areas where you might not see the significance at first in the shorter cut of it. And people do put so much into these compilations, and to get all of the material and the comments and stuff, you get a better sense of what it took to assemble, why certain choices were made. And when you're hearing from a director and an actor or someone who's worked really hard on it, you really get a deeper understanding of what the story meant to them, what they were really trying to tell. I didn't even really know that Kevin Costner produced, directed, and starred in this movie. I just knew that he was the protagonist, and I knew the story and so forth. But when I rewatch it, right, understanding that vision that he had and the direction he went with it, and just being able to go back and forth between the character he played and then assembling this crew and really being true to the environment, the areas they're filming, the historical accuracy of the Union Army and settlers, early colonialists people on the frontier just surviving their struggle, that sense of getting the architecture right. Just so much detail went into it. So I'm in awe as I've learned more of just how passionate he was in particular about telling the story and doing it justice. And I know, I think that's really, really hard, especially around issues of race, issues of colonization. But I think that this is for me something that, since it was one of the earliest memories or earliest movies that really made an impression on me, that I think all Americans have this sort of indelible sense of cinema because it's ubiquitous and it's a big industry in this country. So for me, this movie really impressed a lot of values of, well, this is the history. This is a situation where sometimes your judgment may be better than the sort of hegemon, than the dominant, in this case, the military institution that someone's working for. All of those dynamics, I think, have many parallels in allegory and so forth today. And they're still having a sense of understanding, even in communication, like the language barriers. I love that when we're traveling all the time. It's about, okay, where are we? What do they speak here? What are the phrases we need to know?
And communicating without words, and through smiles, gestures, things like that.
Of course.
Seeing that portrayed in Dances with Wolves was magic. And it wasn't the native people slowly learning English. No, it was Kevin Costner learning the Sioux language.
Absolutely.
And having subtitles. And I know Hollywood pushed back against that, as they are prone to do, and they were wrong, as they always are when they push against. It's, you know, we've seen this time and time again, where the people who make the films, they break the rules. They go against what they're told is right, what the people want, because they're never correct on predicting what the people want. And oftentimes audiences are a lot more intelligent than the industry gives them credit for. And I think this was yet another example of that.
Yeah, that emphasis on what the market wants is such BS.
It is. It really is. And that's not even a strong enough word.
Yeah.
One scene I just wanted to call attention to, and this was in the 3-hour version, but the payoff wasn't, where they're initially hunting the buffalo, and Kevin Costner is walking with the Sioux tribe in search of the buffalo, and they come across all these buffalo carcasses that have been hunted by the white man. And the way the white man hunts, he doesn't use the buffalo. He doesn't use the meat. He only goes for the skin. And I think they said the tongue.
Yeah.
I don't know what the deal is with buffalo tongues.
It's very transactional.
But they leave carcasses lying all around. And just, you know, seeing all these native people and the sadness in their face as they're looking at this, they're hunting buffalo. They're going to be killing the buffalo too. But when they hunt the buffalo, they honor the buffalo. They use every bit of it. And to see their lives just wasted and spread around on this huge field, you know, it's something that wouldn't dawn on us immediately as the crime that they feel it was. And in the second version of the film, the 4-hour version, there is payoff because they find the people that did that and they slaughter them. They slaughter the humans who did that to the buffalo because of what they've done. And you see the celebration where they've actually got scalps hanging and people dancing, and the heroes of the film, the so-called good guys, are part of the celebration. And Kevin Costner says that he didn't feel comfortable staying close to them that night. He says that those words in the 3-hour version, but it didn't make much sense because he didn't see that scene. So it's not a sugarcoating. You see the darkness, and you also see the goodness, and you see the cultural differences. And that was one big cultural difference.
I would imagine that the critiques of this film maybe don't include the longer cut, and so many versions of it were made for TV and cut even shorter. So imagine how much less intelligible a media text, as a scholar might call this, becomes when that text itself has been butchered beyond recognition, mm-hmm. not just by Hollywood, but then, you know, to air over television or wherever else it it ends up. I think it's actually available on YouTube in entirety now. It's become
what the Dances with Wolves on YouTube.
I think it
is. Don't do that. Don't see it on YouTube.
Don't watch it on YouTube. But
no, that's not the way to see it.
But it's become anyway.
Well, they have those ads pop up in the middle. Oh my God!
It's not a way to experience it.
That's worthy of slaughter too. That's a crime.
The parallels to Ferguson. Some of the words with the protests, like, you know, white America needs to realize that, you know, they're happy that that Black America is just in seeking justice, not revenge. Those statements that we heard over the spring, or other, things that are modern to tribes and reservations now, like encroachment from industry, like the pipelines. That is an attitude of, well, we view our rivers and our natural, like our coexistence with land, in a much different way than this sort of transactional industrial sense of resource extraction, or in this case buffalo pelt extraction.
Yeah.
When they come upon this hunt, realizing they're competing now for resources with this people that does not at all appreciate or have reverence for the habitats they share in nearly the same way.
And we all know they've won. We all know they win in the end, which is terrible.
That is, I think, the sadness of it. And I think the resistance actually towards the end of the movie, spoiler alert.
No, we spoiled it already. Come on.
But towards the end, they eventually, Kevin Costner's character, John Dunbar, the soldier, is going off with his love interest, who herself was captured by the tribe and brought up by them.
They separate from the tribe. They go off on their own.
And I often look at that ending. He's going off into the snow, and I love that it's kind of wintry out right now, but they're at the winter camp, and they're going their separate ways because he will be hunted. He's a traitor to the Union, and so he will attract undue attention to the tribe, and he doesn't want to put them in that kind of jeopardy. So he goes off, and I look at that ending. It's very sad. It talks about the end of the end of the film has a card with text about the end of the buffalo, but I look at them going off as it's John, his freedom, and it is that autonomy, and that is actually the essence of America that America doesn't even realize it has. That,
yeah, the good part.
He even chose that the mission of this institution, this bureaucracy, does not actually have at heart the interests of the land and the people and the true spirit of the nation.
It's amazing because so many people of the white race get that and would share that with Native people if they only had the chance, like John Dunbar got.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Great film. Please go out and see it if you haven't already, if you haven't ruined it enough for you. And even knowing what's going to happen, it's still majestic.
We could go on.
We could go on. We did go on. It's the only film we've talked about 2 weeks. We didn't play the theme, so please don't complain, because it wasn't an official look back at that film. Next week, we'll probably look at something else. Okay, so we only have a couple of minutes left. I just saw this bulletin come in that's really confusing. You know how Biden issued these proclamations or
executive orders, right?
Executive orders.
Yeah.
I didn't know they could be suspended, but they can be, apparently.
What?
Yeah. So a federal judge in Texas has issued a temporary block on Biden's 100-day pause on deportation. There's so many things in that sentence. Oh my God. Okay, so he had a 100-day pause on deportations. Now, a judge has temporarily blocked that pause on deportations.
So that means still deport people in Texas.
So that means by blocking it, that means people are being deported. It's very confusing and frustrating. But hopefully he keeps fighting.
I heard Rand Paul on the Senate floor yapping about this.
God, that was what all the cursing was.
Going on and on about how this basically allows MS-13 and all the bad hombres And this was talked about extensively on Washington Journal this morning, how that trope of the bad hombre was is convenient and is actually not, believe it or not, not who these policies affect, but we're made to think that.
There is no similarity between riots last year and storming the Capitol to assassinate leaders and overthrow the government. There are two different things. Okay, we can spend a long time talking about that, but they are not the same. Neither one is a positive thing. No one is celebrating. No one is encouraging people to riot and to loot, except for rioters and looters.
And yet, they would have you believe that those two things are anywhere in the same stratosphere.
What Rand Paul and his ilk are doing is trying to draw attention away from the crimes that they are implicated in. And it's disgusting to see this, but it's also further ammunition for the statement that you should never trust these people. They will turn on you every time. They will forget about their crimes and try to pivot around and make it seem as if there's some false equivalency when there certainly is not. And, you know, there's the thing, there's harmless conspiracies. They don't bother me. They're funny. You know, the truthers, the birthers, the flat earthers, all these people of saying their spiel, it doesn't affect things. They can peddle whatever nonsense they want. But when you start peddling lies that create dangerous actions, like saying there's no such thing as coronavirus, or that masks are bad for you, or that the election was stolen, then that leads to people doing things that hurt other people directly. And you know what? You have the right to say it. You do. And it's not censorship. Censorship is when you go to prison the second you say it. That's government censorship. If Twitter decides that you're a dumbass and you're causing problems, they can kick you off. You know, if somebody calls into one of our shows and is spouting nonsense like that, we can hang up, because we don't want that kind of thing. Period. So there's a difference. It's not censorship. Don't listen to what these politicians are saying. The Lee Zeldins, the Rand Pauls, they don't know what they're talking about. It's not the same thing. And I just hope with the new administration that we actually take some steps, that we don't get caught up in this. We don't get caught up in this too much, and have all these distractions. It's terrible. Hey, we're going to bring our friend Finn into the conversation now. We haven't done this in a while. He's in the studio. We're in a remote location, but yet somehow we figured out how to talk to each other. Finn, are you there?
I am here, yeah. And, you know, just briefly, as far as the flat earthers go, I mean, flat earthers, you know, it's possible, because there's flat earthers who believe this and they're all over the globe, you know?
Yes, yes. I didn't mean to offend your beliefs in any way.
Thank you. I actually do follow them. I belong to their Facebook group.
I have so many questions for them. So many questions.
So how are you guys?
We're good. You know, It's been a kind of a weird week, filled with happiness and also filled with trepidation, because, you know, as we mentioned, more people seem to be affected by COVID lately. What's your experience been like? I mean, you come into the studio, you travel, and we kind of stay isolated.
Well, the truth is, two Tuesdays ago when I wasn't here, I actually had the virus.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I only had a couple of days of symptoms. I had a mild fever and about a day and a half of a dry cough. And I've been going since the beginning of this, due to the nature of me being on the subway and in contact with people every day, I've been going for testing once every 2 weeks since the beginning of this, since the first tests were available. And I had skipped a few weeks, and I, for logistical reasons of different types, and then I had these little symptoms, and so I went and I tested positive for the virus, and a week later I tested negative for the virus but positive for the antibodies. And then Friday I got the vaccine.
And how did you qualify for the vaccine? Because you already had it?
Well, no. It's because I work for a division of the MTA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Duly noted. We should work for the MTA.
No, you don't want to do that.
Wow. So Finn, I know you take precautions. You're careful, and yet you still got the virus.
Because as we know, despite what the anti-maskers say, that masks do nothing. What masks actually do is a lot, but they're not. Nothing is 100%. Mm-hmm. So, and I am in contact with. I'm in close proximity contact with many people during the course of my day, and not to mention in locations that are common areas like the New York City subway system. And I'm in close proximity with many people who are exposed potentially regularly. So, yeah, it was. I was amazed it took so long for me to get it, to tell you the truth.
Well, I'm just glad you got through it, and I hope that you stay away from it, doesn't come back or anything like that, and the vaccine kicks in. What was the vaccine experience like?
It was a Moderna vaccine. It was very simple. It was a shot, and all was well. And I have to go back in towards the middle of February for my second shot, because Moderna is a two. I think they both the major ones are two shots, but with the Moderna, it's a month apart, so 28 days apart. So you get your second shot in 28 days later, and it was fine. And you know, the main thing is that what they remind you of, which I'm quite conscious of, is just because you've had the virus and just because you have had the vaccine, you still need to protect just as much, because nobody knows how long these antibodies last in your system. Nobody knows anything, really. It's still a relatively new thing. Let's consider the fact we've only been studying this for like a year, really. And that's very little time in standard, disease experimentation and knowledge. And so we really don't know. So you still wear your mask every day. You still do all your precautions. You still do the sanitizing. I almost said Satanizing, which is what I do. And you do all those things to stay as safe as possible and keep those around you safe. So, yeah.
Yeah, and most importantly, because so many people are unable to avoid those situations in the regular course of their daily life. So if you can afford to possibly stay away from those kinds of scenarios and wear your mask, keep your hands nice and clean, that's helping other people and reducing the spread of any kind of infectious material while people are working and trying to get on with their lives at this time.
That's right. And that's the biggest thing we can all do, right, is to take care of ourselves and also take care of each other. So that's what we need to do in the world. And the more that gets out there and gets through the heads of some thicker heads out there, the better off we are.
Well, Finn, again, so happy that you got through it okay, and I hope we all get through this okay. Anything to look forward to on tonight's show?
Well, tonight we're just going to, since the inauguration, et cetera, prior to that, I've kind of been uptight during the show. I don't know why. But now it's time to just stay loose and play some music tonight. And no interviews for another couple of weeks, and just do some groove music. A little tribute to Sylvain from the New York Dolls, who passed away last week. Yeah. Things along those lines, and it's just relaxing, doing some grooving.
Awesome. Yeah, if you were like wound up, this is the playlist. This is the set to unwind. Right.
Right. Exactly. You got it.
Well, Finn, we look forward to seeing you in person. It's almost been a year now, and hopefully it's within sight.
Yeah, I miss you guys too. Right. Great shows as always, gents.
Thank you very much. And that's Finn. He's coming up next. We are out of here for now. We'll be back next week.
So long.
Good night.
That I became a landmark in the hip-hop field of art. I shed light, yet my skin is dark. I'm not concerned with climbing the chart, cause why should you pay when it comes from the heart? I'll start, cause only Ja will create it. I'll just name it, edutainment. People sit and they look at my album like a problem, they try to solve them. They don't know, it only leads the way to a bright, more positive day. By itself, it's not the bright day. Sit up straight and hear what I say. Fear and ignorance, I'm down for stopping this. But the bright day is your consciousness. business. I am a poet, my words will heal you. I'm not a phony, I really feel you. That's why I walk and talk to my nation, wherever they are in any situation. They usually ask for an autograph, and I'll whip out the pen and just write blast. Master, K-R-S-O-N-E-B-D-P, peace and unity. But do not concentrate on the paper. Concentrate on the laws of the creator. Cause when the paper's gone, it will deceive you. But Allah will never leave you. Nothing I say now is hypothetical. These are the facts, a little metaphysical. We are one, every heart, every lung. So why then was the black man hung? He was hung by the so-called Christians that went to church and did not listen. See, Jesus couldn't stand politics, so they nailed him to the crucifix. Then it was that way, today it's a trigger. So why is the Pope such a political figure? I don't know, but it's really beyond me. But through knowledge, they'll never con me. That's from Jesus Christ to right now. Every time a black man speaks up, kapow. See, people concentrate on the leader and not the message coming through the speaker. If the Christians really heard Christ, the black man never would have lived this life. My point is that do not concentrate on what I say, create, or debate. I might be great and you might admire, but what I say is to take you much higher, more higher than the physical plane, to the plane of forces and the astral plane, the mental plane and the final three. They're all around you, yet you can't see. So grab the spear of life and aim it, and you'll be guided by edutainment.